Hello, welcome to the Mike and Doug Show. I'm Doug. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Doug. How are you on this great Monday morning?
Well, it's incredible. We had a little snow up here like you had down there, and it's as if winter has come. So it's really
Yes, it is.
Oh, my goodness. I don't know if I'm ready for that, especially with all the predictions of how this is going to be such a gloomy and desolate and horrible winter. So let's see.
I've heard those all my life.
Yeah, well, let's see if we can't, instead of the winter of great despair, we should turn it into something more positive. I can see some movement on the on many fronts where it seems as if people are working together so that a critical mass is being created of resistance through consciousness as well as actions to a lot of the insanity that's going on, which we have pointed out is really a battle with demons, particularly the demon mammon, the demon of money, of greed, of, you know, lust for wealth, miserly gluttony of gold and silver and money. You know, this kind of stuff is what has led the very people that we're going to bash today to do what they do, because they think that there is no limit, because this is a corporatocracy that turns into a personal dynasty. So you have to make so much money that you can, that all your children from now until the end of time will also be wealthy because of it. That's the British monarchical aristocratic corporatocracy. It's an oligarchy. It's basically a mafia. And recently, when I heard that this name, Glenn Youngkin, I thought to myself, I thought I've heard that name. Who is that? I don't care. Because they're running against Terry McAuliffe, one of the founding members of the Clinton Foundation, one of the most corrupt foundations ever created in human history. And Terry McAuliffe, of course, is that is incredibly corrupt governor. And he and his wife cheated with all this money with Hillary Clinton, so that Andrew McCabe, who, again, we predicted Andrew McCabe would not have his retirement taken away from him for his astounding lies that he told in the investigations concerning his ridiculous compromised behavior with the Clinton Foundation. So this all ties together. So when Glenn Youngkin came out, I didn't know anything about him, but I figured if they ran a pig, I'd probably vote for the pig before I'd vote for Terry McAuliffe. But you remembered some previous research of the miners and what Americans for Innovation have had already uncovered. So what can you tell us about this new governor, Glenn Youngkin?
Yeah, I'm like you. I didn't know who the guy was. And then all of a sudden his name pops in, and then magically he wins the election. So I thought, well, initially I thought, well, maybe that's good because he's running against McAuliffe, like you say, is one of the most evil people on this planet. So then we start looking at Youngkin, and yes, we did remember that, well, there were some brain cells firing. We didn't know exactly why. And when we discovered very easily that Youngkin worked for the Carlyle Group, that narrowed the subject matter down, because we knew from extensive research several years ago that Carlyle was the chief funder of a British corporation by the name of Kinetic. And by the way, when you say corporation by Kinetic, I'm going to shorten it to Kinetic, but as is typical, they've got about 30 different subsidiaries now. So don't let anyone fool you, because in all of those subsidiaries, they all roll up their control to the one Kinetic holding company. So we looked at Kinetic. We knew it started in 2002, about the time the federal government was starting to start implementing our social networking technology in networks. And this was at the time we were still inventing. And Chandler thought we were ready to go. We weren't. So they had to put that on hold. They moved Zuckerberg into Harvard and had him wait. And so it was during this time that this company called Kinetic emerged in England, and then just began to get these wonderful contracts with the British Ministry of Defense and the United States Navy mainly, but also the Army and various parts of the Department of Defense and DARPA. So clearly this was a made up company. You just don't, if you're a real entrepreneur going out there to develop business, you don't get business that quickly. This was a setup. So we could see that. And then we were able to attain all of the annual reports of Kinetic from its foundation in November 11th of 2002. And in that founding document, we find Glenn Youngkin's name. And so what this means is Glenn Youngkin was the founder of Kinetic, this British company, and he was doing it on behalf of his employer, which was Carlyle Group. And then immediately within months, in February, so it's less than 2 months later, a man by the name of Sir Jonathan Edward Simmons became the first director. And we knew already that Simmons was the keeper of the Queen's Golden Share in multiple corporations, including Wellcome Trust. And he is a current director of Wellcome. In addition to his senior or leadership roles in Goldman Sachs, in what else? The other companies are HSBC. He's one of the senior directors of HSBC. So we're seeing the usual suspects. And so Simmons is a key player. He's like the Jeffrey Patty or the Lord Mark Malik Brown of the Queen's Golden Share. We know from the earlier records that in the 90s, Jeffrey Patty was the keeper of the Queen's Golden Share as the Minister of Foreign Trade and Commerce, having come out of taking RCA and Marconi and marrying those with the British Aerospace, which were already allied with American AT&T and the Department of Defense. So we knew Patty was helping consolidate all this cooperation between the U.S. government, Department of Defense, and the British Ministry of Defense. We knew that. But Youngkin is a new player. And so what we've knew from those records, our people pulled all of the records for Kinetic up through last year. And those are available now as a zip file, so you can get them all. And in 2003, there was a filing called a special resolution. And up until then, we knew about the Queen's Golden Share. It's a 1 pound share that's held in a company, but it has these magical powers where the crown can override any decision of the board of directors whenever he or she chooses. So even though that it's 1 pound in a company that may have 10 million shares, that 1 pound share can override them all. And I know that's hard for people to understand, but you've got these layers of stock, and each class of stock can have different voting rights. So you can have a lot of numbers at the bottom in terms of number of shares, but as compared to the one golden share, the amount of shares below that is irrelevant. The queen, the monarch, has control over Kinetic, 100% control to this day. And this special resolution was the most clear description of the what's called the special share that we had ever found, and it was related to Kinetic. So I get to the main part of the story. There was something sticking in the back of our heads that there were signatures on that particular document. So our folks pulled those this morning, and sure enough, we found the Secretary of Kinetic signed that document, which essentially approved the Queen's full control over Kinetic, and it was signed by Glenn Youngkin. So there is judicially recognizable evidence of Glenn Youngkin's treason. Now, we can talk about why it's treason if you want to, but in our minds, there's no way this is anything but a description of his sedition and treason.
Well, he's a queen's agent.
Yes.
You know, he might as well be called a crown agent. And not only that, when we look at the fact that Kinetic is, in fact, a more or less a corporatized version of MI5, MI6, and right. that they also are involved in working with Perbright and the Muriel Animal Hospital Institute, which Elizabeth Manningham Bueller
right.
is the head of Muriel, and they work together to create vaccines for animals, but also experimental vaccines for humans. And so that's who's taking over the world right now.
Can I point out, she's the one of the trustees of Wellcome, the Perbright Institute today, not Muriel.
Yes. Oh, at this point, she's with Perbright, not Muriel?
Right. Muriel moved to China, as we know.
Yep.
4-hour drive from Wuhan, and that's where a lot of their level 4 bioweapons research is going on, including the work in Wuhan. But this is another area called Nanjing or Nunqing. I can't remember the name of the city.
Well, it's highly likely that Perbright controls Muriel, and that Elizabeth there's no question. When she was the head of, what was it? She was head of MI6, wasn't she?
And MI5.
MI5, and they called her M. And so in the movies, the James Bond movies, when they refer to M, they are actually referring to her.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking about Jonathan Simons, or Simmons, however you pronounce it, being the head of Kinetic, but also handling the golden shares, you are talking about a group of people that's more powerful than the British Parliament.
Absolutely.
More powerful than the British monarchy, the British Anglican Church, or basically the Privy Council, some of the richest people in the world, Rothschilds included. So what you have pointed out here is that Glenn Youngkin was and has been for a long time an agent of the Queen, knowing of this type of treasonous behavior that has been happening economically, militarily, politically, and he basically would have to still be in her pocket. I mean, he's basically sworn fealty to her.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of some people who are trying to defend him might argue that, well, that's where he used to work. He doesn't work there now. So that how can you hold him accountable to the agreements he made prior to being governor? And that's a fair question. So what we did is we looked in detail at the organizing documents, the Articles of Association, and the discussion around this special resolution on how the special share was going to control Kinetic. And in doing that, we discover that there were commitments to the Official Trade, the Official Secrets Act in England, which is it's basically the secrecy of the government, top secret stuff. And he committed to that. So he committed to not discuss any of the deals that he was cutting with the U.S. government, with Kinetic, with the subsidiaries of Kinetic, with Carlisle, with the Department of Navy, Air Force, Army. Kinetic handles all the inventory systems of the U.S. Army worldwide. I mean, to me, I don't know why that one bugs me, but here we gave the British an inventory control contract that's run out of London. But anyway, in doing so, he made commitments to the Official Secrets Act to protect the interests of the Queen. If you look at this document, you'll see there's no discussion of protecting the interests of the United States. It talks about protecting the monarch. And so here we have the company secretary committing to not to hold all secrets of the monarch, even though he doesn't even work there anymore. He is still subject to those secrecy agreements. So I don't know for a fact, but I can guess he didn't disclose all these interlocking relationships when he ran for governor. We have pulled up his financial report, and it is replete with all the interlocking relationships that we've now come to see with these globalists. But what we do see is that he very specifically did not disclose his kinetic relationships, because it's not illegal to have foreign relationships with foreign powers if you have taken that issue to the legislature or Congress and gotten Congress to waive it, or gotten the Virginia legislature to waive it. But he didn't do any of that. And so therefore, these documents are condemn him to committing open treason against the people of Virginia, and by inference to the rest of us in the United States.
Yep, it's conclusive. I've looked at the documents myself, and there's no doubt about that. And it's isn't it funny that someone who comes out of the blue, supported by Trump, coming down on somebody who had one of the most vicious controls of any state gubernatorial race in America, with tons of money, and all the right evil people behind him, Terry McAuliffe, gets knocked out by this guy? Well, then you have to ask who's supporting him, and you'll find out that then it was the Carlyle Group. Carlyle Group is where Daddy Bush left the presidency as a millionaire, and 2 years later was a billionaire because of the Carlyle Group's no-bid contracts through KBR, through Halliburton, through all kinds of groups, as well as his gold dealings with Barrick Gold. And then it just absolutely criminal activity. We get to see that Halliburton had five federal indictments against them at the time that Cheney, then looking for who the vice president should be, decided to put forth his own name. At that time, he had five grand jury indictments against him because of his Halliburton dealings. So Carlyle Group, who runs Halliburton and many basically militaristic oriented companies at one point, there was well over 200 companies as part of Carlyle. They got all the good contracts, and they got them without even putting in bids. And then when they would have lawsuits brought against them, they seemed to just be absolutely immune to such things. So when we're looking at this, I just want to say first off that the Queen's veto power with the golden shares is not like the president here in America. If he vetoes something, then it can be overridden. When the Queen vetoes it, it cannot be overridden.
Right.
So when people say the Queen doesn't run England, then they're just completely naive. Every day she receives the communications in the red box. She says yes by not saying no. As long as she doesn't veto it, it goes ahead.
Right.
But when you get the yearly statement that she makes each year, she said it 100 times last year. She says, my government, my laws, my administration, my this, my that. She must have said the word my over 100 times in her yearly address to the parliament. So, in fact, if you think that she doesn't run the country, you're incorrect. And if you don't think that the hundreds of members on her Privy Council are the political elite, the insiders of Britain, you'd be mistaken. And if you didn't think that her inside secret council, the secret chamber of the Privy Council, which has people like Geoffrey Paddy on it, who basically, as you pointed out, his job, Geoffrey Paddy, was the chief propagandist for basically the Queen and the Privy Council and the corporate British imperialistic fascists, because, and their corporatists. And they basically are beyond government. They're beyond nation. They're beyond anything, because of their offshore accounts, have as much money in them as all the money that the countries have outside of offshore accounts. So basically, it demonstrates that the ripoff of the wealth of every nation, and the Queen is one of the worst, 54 Commonwealth nations, and she rips off every one of them and has offshore accounts in most of them. And then she tries to tell people that she's only worth a couple hundred million dollars. This is, of course, total nonsense.
So, by the way, we talk about control here, and we talk about this inner circle within the Privy Council. You know, one of the things that a number of our researchers are doing is really starting to get a handle on the Rothschilds' influence on the British economy in the 1800s. And one of the things that I had never seen reference to, and we discovered it in reading newspapers from the early 1800, 1810, 1811, is that there was a secret committee within the Bank of England. Now, the Bank of England was all attorneys, was managed by 24 attorneys, and then two officers, a deputy governor and a governor. And we discover, even in Parliament, they discussed this, that there was a secret committee within the Bank of England that consisted of four people. And the argument for having that secret committee is there are times when we don't have time to bring it to all 24 people, there's an emergency, blah, 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 typical bureaucrat excuse for overriding a procedure. And so the committee was formed under the idea that there are times when things are just too important to wait. And what happened is that became a permanent committee that was secretly running the Bank of England from before the War of 1812. So here we see this pattern of how the British, in their mentality for domination, will put up a group as the ostensible front for a set of decisions. But in fact, the decisions are actually made by these four people. And those four people report directly to the monarch. So we're talking about five people. And my bet is we're going to see that today. It's probably five people running the world right now.
And then you found
May
out.
I add something to the conversation? I mean, look at this. This is Virginia. The British have overtaken now in full power Virginia. What would our forefathers say about this, our founding fathers? And then on top of that, before you leave your video, what can the people of Virginia do now? Give me some action that they can do within this month to out Youngkin and get him out of office before he swears in.
Well, he has committed fraud. If he's withheld this information, which we know he has, then he's committed fraud, and therefore the whole results of the election can be unwound. Fraud negates all decisions or all judgments, and so the judgment of the people, according to their information, is that Youngkin won. I, for one, don't believe for a minute any vote related with using electronic voting machines is fair or accurate. I think they're all rigged. And yeah. So they just decided who was going to win. So they flipped a coin. And in those guys' mind, heads I win, tails you lose. That's the way they operate. And it certainly would in Virginia.
Absolutely. It's either globalist or globalist light.
But it's definitely or global A or globalist B. There's no light. Republican rhinos are not light.
That's right. And we always like to make a clear distinction between the shadow government, which are people who have been, in some cases, elected to these offices. They've been appointed to these offices. Everything they're doing is completely legal, but it is shadow. It is the demonic thoughts of evil laws that are being put right into place. So what we're seeing with this particular case is that you're offered the uniparty choice. You want pure evil, or do you want someone who's trying to outdo pure evil?
Right.
And in either case, I think your point is correct, that it's a matter of fraud. It's a matter of interlocking directorships. If someone is the head of Kinetic, that is a corporation that is transnational. It's a multinational. It's a globalist corporation. And if that person is in direct association with, of course, the head of Kinetic, who has control over the golden shares, then that one person, Jonathan Richard Simons, or whatever his name is, basically then controls Lockheed Martin, our number one military industrial complex corporate agency company that we work with. And they, for a long time, had the largest military intelligence group outside of the military. So in other words, the Queen controls a company that is the largest supplier for the military industrial complex in America, as well as intelligence. And right. Then that goes right down the line. And as I mentioned before, Uranco is a British, generally mostly owned because of the golden share controls our uranium in this country. The Brits control just about every major deal, and if they don't, then they tax it in some way, in my opinion.
So you remember the Atomic Weapons Establishment, that this is a organization that's controlled by Lockheed, Serco, and one other company. It's a third, and a third. But then the underlying issue there is it's controlled by the Golden Share. So the Queen runs the atomic weapons business.
Correct. Through Rio Tinto, through also this group that you just mentioned, the Atomic Weapons something.
AWE. Atomic Weapons Establishment.
And they actually then control the atomic agreements with France and with Germany. So basically the whole Western world is controlled in terms of uranium and nuclear power by the Queen. And she tries to play like she's in a game of fighting with Putin and Russia. No, they're partners. They partner together when they work in America, and they do work in America to this very day. Russia controls the uranium that is being taken off of our previous missiles in a particular program that they created that has been going on for decades now. So really, when it comes down to it, what I'm trying to say is that Youngkin was in a position where he was so powerful that because he was a globalist and a transnationalist, he wasn't an American anymore.
Right.
If you work for HSBC, you work for the criminal, corrupt bank of England, but it just happens to be overseas. Right. If you work for Lockheed Martin, like so many of these people do, whether as a lawyer or whatever, basically you have access to all the information. You have to have a top secret security clearance to even work in these companies. And then who do you make your fealty to? To the Queen of England, who is the owner, the director, the controller of the company. And they control, as you pointed out, Serco controls so much that we couldn't move any military equipment in the world without Serco basically giving us a go ahead first. And Serco right. was owned by British corporations, and it is as corrupt as it can possibly
be. And last year, Serco got the contract from the Navy to manage Diego Garcia and all Navy communications worldwide.
From the beginning, we have seen that no matter who it was that was appointed from the Privy Council, taking over for propaganda, taking over for war creation, fomenting war, conducting war, conducting mercantilism on the open seas, all of these things were a problem of the British East India Company as right. it was being folded into the British Parliament and into the British nation itself. And when you're talking about the 54 Commonwealth nations, what you're talking about is the fleecing and the exploitation of the corporate colonialism created by the British East India Company.
Right. It was a reorganized version. All they were doing was they didn't change what they wanted. They just changed how they did it. And I think that's the confusing thing for most people. They can see British East India Company from the days of the revolution going forward. And that's one of the things that we have seen a total consistency in why we're studying the Rothschilds so much from the last century and how they financed that for the British Empire. So the Brits would want to go to war with somebody. So they would use some of their propaganda to create a fake conflict in the minds of the British people. Then they would start a war, and there would the Rothschilds be to loan money to the British government to fight the war. And usually, this is the interesting trick, they would usually not loan all the money. They would loan most of it, and then the British Parliament would kick in some. So what we see there is how they were using debt to finance all their wars where they weren't actually coming up with any cash. And this system worked so well for them that it became the system that we suffer from today. And it hasn't changed. It's only gotten more sophisticated. But at every point in this process, the Rothschilds were there to do the bidding of the British government. That is really clear. And if people think these Jewish bankers were on the outs or were not culturally accepted in Britain, you would be mistaken. These people were, they had ingratiated themselves into the entire, they were all German bankers. They moved to England. They accommodated the needs of the British Empire to loan money or to go through the process of looking like they were loaning money when all they were doing was taking the debt and turning around and selling off bonds to support the debt. And they, it was like a huge Ponzi scheme, and they just did it over and over again and got better at it. And they also provided huge amounts of cash to the United States. And it's real clear that every time they called in a note in the United States, they would create a crisis in our country, even though initially they did not own the United States banks, but they were involved in it. And then by the time of Abraham Lincoln and the greenbacks and the assassination of Lincoln, they had pretty much taken over after the war. And that's when Lionel Rothschild became a director of the Bank of England and was formally recognized as a member of parliament in 1869. So by then, the Rothschilds were feeding this penchant for war and for the profits of war throughout the world for the British Empire. This has never not been about the British Empire. The two opium wars in China were both about the British Empire wanting to make money off of the addiction of opium that the Chinese had and that the emperors were trying to get rid of, but the British forced them to continue importing opium. And what do we see today? We see an opioid crisis. Isn't that an interesting coincidence? So debt slavery became their replacement for black and brown slavery of the plantation. It became debt slavery, and every race, white, black, brown, red, yellow, we all became debt slaves to this system. And it has to be debt, because without debt, they can't enslave you. But with debt, they can control you like a bull with a nose ring.
And that was the Rothschild's trick. We will put into the gold bullion vault enough gold and silver to back up the currency of England, and we'll let you print, and then you can print paper.
But it doesn't really back it up.
It doesn't. And who says that the amount that is in there is still in there at any
exactly.
time? These are fake audits. They also write paper notes on the gold that's sitting there because nobody ever redeems gold notes. You don't get to because of the right. Very difficult process that is involved. So that's the debt slavery, which is a nation debt. Well, they found out in Italy long before that anytime that the Pope wanted to go to war, that he'd have to, of course, work with bankers. He'd have to get the money together because in most cases, in many, many cases, these were mercenaries that had to be paid for going to war. So they found out that, of course, if you're going to loan money for a war, there's going to be interest on it. Well, the Jews were allowed to charge usury, but the Catholics weren't. So the Catholic Vatican Bank was not the bank for wars, per se. That was done by, in Florence, the Medici, or by the Banco family in Venice, or all these Italian banks that some of them still exist to this very day. So these bankers then really put nations into conditions of economic slavery right. over the usury, basically the spell of mammon, the spell of money, to think, well, if you loan me money to go to war now, I'm going to go to another country and I'm going to beat up on them. I'm going to steal their money and steal all their wealth. Then when I get back, I can pay you back. Is not a very moral proposition to begin with, you see. And so they knew this. So the bankers from the beginning knew full well exactly what they were doing. They right. were being cheaters, liars, and they knew that if you died at war, in war, they would keep your money. They also, in some cases, would foment the war to create it and then direct the war during it so that they would have higher profits. This yep. still goes on to this very day. And so when we're talking about a person who is the head of Kinetic Kinetic is an intelligence agency that starts wars. Yep. I believe, and I'll hold to this, that it was Kinetic who released the Wuhan virus in Wuhan during the World Military Games and then two other events in Wuhan. And I believe that it was created in their P4 labs at the Muriel Animal Hospital or Institute, which is also near Wuhan. So I believe Kinetic worked with Muriel and worked with Perbright to release this last virus, as they have released viruses in the past also. And why would they do this? Because they are still attempting to get a better control of China. They've always been a controlling factor in China.
Excuse me. Go ahead.
They've always been a controlling factor in China and in Russia. Remember, the British created Bolshevism, Russian communism. They created Chinese communism. And now, to this very day, they do everything they can to control everything in both of those countries and make it look like there are enemies so that they can continue their bankster war profiteering.
Well, that's the game that the Rothschilds taught, and that was never be out front with your activity. Always be in the background, maybe even not known at all. And we now know, for example, that George Peabody, the American banker, was secretly financed by the Rothschilds, N.M. Rothschild, and then later Lionel Rothschild. So we see this succession of tactics that have not changed and to this day. And then we add on this layering of the fact that the Rothschilds were so eager to maintain this power. There were five brothers that fanned out all over the all over Europe, and one of them came to England, and that was the prominent English banking family of the Rothschilds. And the other odd thing we see, and this was even discussed hundreds of years ago in newspapers in Britain, is how much intermarrying there was occurring among the Rothschilds. And we all know that when you start having that kind of genetic mixing, you start to create some very strange children. And I think that's why one of the things we see is this dysfunction of and lack of morality among these people. And I think that shame on us, I say, for allowing these people such a position in our cultures that they have now taken over with our cash. And that is to our detriment as a Christian society, that we've allowed that to happen. And I think we have to take responsibility of that. We can't just blame the Rothschilds. They were just doing what came natural to them, but we let it happen. The British let it happen. And we're suffering from it now.
Boy, that's a fact. And when you think about Rothschilds, people are going to tell you it's a conspiracy theory that they have always ran the Bank of England. They don't need to run the Bank of England. They had Lionel on there for 40 years. I tried finding the direct connection years ago and didn't come very far with it. But what I did find out was that, just as we know today, that Evelyn de Rothschild is the financial advisor to the Queen, and that he then speaks to the Bank of England in her stead, that probably from day one, as soon as N.M. Rothschild became the court Jew in England for financing wars, that he would have been, of course, the financial advisor to the monarchy of England, and no one can ask any questions. Well, that would give then the Rothschild family the insider trading edge that no one else could possibly handle. And remember, the Rothschild, N.M. Rothschild office in London handled the daily setting of the silver and gold rates every day for many, many years, and even LIBOR rates. So they basically controlled the market, and everyone knew it, and they controlled it through a communication device of propaganda, which was known as Reuters Press, Reuters Thompson now. They didn't own it, but we know that from the beginning, I demonstrated this in previous articles, that they, Reuters, after just being in existence for a very short period of time, they were right down the street from the Bank of England. And I believe that the Rothschilds were inside of the building that the Bank of England was in. When the Reuters was going to flounder and go bankrupt, they were given capital infusion, venture capital from the Rothschilds and told to keep it quiet. But basically, ever since then, they have directed the propaganda of the number one news agency in the English-speaking world for a long time, and even
we see Reuters carrying almost daily news about the Rothschilds and the Rothschild family, and when they went on vacation, and when they went had dinner with the Queen or the Prince of Wales. I mean, it's kind of disgusting when you see how much sycophantic coverage there was of these royal types. And definitely the Rothschilds were in that crowd. Prince of Wales would regularly have dinner at the Rothschilds. He would come over and have dinner with the Rothschilds in Piccadilly, which is right downtown. And so what we've got to do is stop. What do I want to say? These are people who were enabled by a monarchical system led by the British East India Company that wanted to control the world. And the Rothschilds were only too happy to loan the money. Now, one of the things we can see is that even though American companies and sometimes the American government would borrow money from the Rothschilds, it's real clear that the Rothschilds were never friends of America. I mean, they financed the War of 1812. I mean, they financed the burning down of the White House. And it really never changed after that. So the need for war is a key part of this system of money creation. They've got to have wars in order to regularly flush out their creation of this paper money, and then to devalue their enemies and then buy it up cheap. And so we now have this situation today where most of the world is owned by a handful of people. And so the debt system has reached its ultimate. I mean, I think the other day we saw that pretty much every major company in the world is run by either Vanguard or BlackRock, with a couple of other players, State Street and T. Rowe Price and Fidelity.
And have we ever looked to see if Vanguard or BlackRock has a special deal with the Queen with her one share total votes?
I haven't looked specifically, but it is kind of like that already. Well, you look at Vanguard's logo, by the way.
Well, it's a pirate. They're all pirates.
It's a ship. It's the British ship from
the British Imperial Empire. Just figured out that by creating this huge amount of debt through wars, that humans would act on their benefit to go and seize countries, and they wouldn't have to get their hands dirty, any blood spill from the Rothschilds. And at the end of the day, they just call back their loans. Right. And what is the collateral? All the countries and the companies that have been raided. So it's just the pirates went worldwide. Right. And the way that you look at it, all of this information, which is truth, we're owned by the Brits. We've already been overtaken by the Brits.
Yeah, long ago.
And we get to see this happening again now. Instead of Cecil Rhodes, it's Klaus Schwab. Instead of the City of London, it's Davos. It's still the richest people. Now they're billionaires. But in those days, it was Cecil Rhodes and his gang of merry men. Lord Rothschild, N.M. Rothschild, Lord Purbright, Lord Rosebery. W.T. Stead, and in the first cluster of the Society of Elect, there are different members. But and then, of course, you have to have your Jesuit there, an Anglican turned Catholic turned Jesuit turned member of the Society of the Elect, along with the Booth family, Williams, and the people created the YMCA.
Well, mention him is Cardinal Manning, as the person you just referred to, I think. I
forgot to say his name.
Right.
Yes, the name we shall not say. No, Cardinal Manning. Here's a Jesuit sitting there, just like they sit in Davos. And they sit there and they say, now, what are we going to do with, how are we going to get rid of the overpopulation? How are we going to kill all these people? Okay, now, what are we going to do next year in terms of creating a cyber scare that will then cause these markets to go crazy? And so they sit around and they plan it 1 year and they do it the next year. They should all be put in jail. That's not only insider trading. These are global fascists who are working together against nations. And they believe that they are more powerful than that. So when you got the richest people in England together, what did they do? They decided they needed to kill a lot of people, take over all media, take over all war and all banking, and make sure you have a central banking system and make sure that it's based upon a false fiat currency that basically the people who supposedly hold the rights to print that currency then will have onerous debt for from now until the cows come home. These things have been apothecated. They've all been figured out. We need
to add to your list the takeover of pharma in the late 1800s. I mean, they were looking for a new way to wage war. And so Henry de Worms funded Sir Henry Wellcome, who developed the Wellcome Trust, the Purbright Institute, the Muriel Animal Health Facility, the Wellcome Trust today, which owns Purbright and actually owns the patent on coronavirus. So we've seen this fusion that they've been working on for literally 100 years. And you got to give it to them. They've been persistent. But we've got to add in there this penchant they have to pass this evil system down through their lineage, through their blood lineage. And that's the part of this that the average person, I think, doesn't understand or get, that they would be that able to control the next generation. But I think what we see there is among the next generation, they always groom the ones that are going to take the lead. And they do that slowly. And so it doesn't take but a couple of dozen of these very evil people run by Mammon to control the whole world now. And they've taken control through banking. And as soon as they can fund all of the universities who are doing all the pharma research, they've got them right where they want them. Then they fund the libraries to print out propaganda, and then they fund the newspapers to continue printing out the propaganda. And then they take over intelligence to push out the propaganda, but also to spy on all of us. You see this mentality, and it is long time coming, and it hasn't changed. That in 1800s, what they did in the 1800s, they're doing right now, just more effectively now.
And they thought it out. They created a 200-year plan. And some research that you've done recently, the one that just completely flabbergasted me was that you had found not only that the YMCA and that the Salvation Army were sending people that were basically indigents. They were the people that the rich elite didn't want in Britain anymore. Right. And they were sending them out in kind of a corporate colonialism based upon really fascist means, though the propaganda made it sound like you were going to get 10 acres and a horse and a mule and everything was going to be great. No, they actually turned them into worse than indentured servants. They turned them into economic slaves. So the big factor here was human trafficking. Human trafficking, war is human trafficking, but it's human trafficking to death. But what I had forgotten is that so much human trafficking done by the British East India Company, the Dutch East India Company, was really to death. It was to kill those people. So when you showed that, how is it that they were getting on, they were selling people with these broadsides that were posted everywhere, you know, come be saved from your evil ways, and we're going to give you this wonderful thing in this new colony.
Yeah, and emigrate to Venezuela.
Yeah, and they didn't even tell you necessarily where some of these places were, but certainly Venezuela was one of their biggest programs, a big program. But basically, you got on these ships and no one may have ever heard from you again. And so I said to you, well, how could this happen? How did they load up slaves in the harbors of the city of London or in London on the Thames. I don't get it. How could they have literally, like they did Kamala Harris's great-great-grandfather, loaded up Irish slaves and brought them to the Caribbean and worked them to death, literally worked them to death, worse than war, worse than slavery, because at least a slaver knows that you are an asset. But when you're being this white human trafficker slaver for corporate colonialism, it seems as if they don't even care. And if you look into history, you don't know where those people went. But one thing we know is where they left from. Well, they left from London, and they left from the East India, correct my name, East India Dock Company. Which, and who owned that in 1803? The Queen, the rich people, and the Parliament bought slave ships.
In 1812, the East India Dock was owned by about 15 of the directors of the Bank of England. And they were doing slave trades on the docks. So they'd bring them to London, then they would sell some of them there, and then they would ship some of them to the United States. But here's the real key. We have to know how evil the system was, because the monarchy has done an excellent job of propaganda and making themselves apart from this very sad, evil story. But what we now have discovered through the newspapers of the time is that when, after slavery was abolished officially by Parliament in 1833, these bankers had to figure out how they were going to continue to staff their plantations and their emerging industries. And so what they did is they created the YMCA and the Salvation Army as essentially recruiting systems to recruit low-paid workers into their factories and to their plantations. And then they had to send them overseas. And since they couldn't just force them to go overseas, they had to convince them that it was a good thing to do. So enter a new organization that was created called the Emigration Fund. And that Emigration Fund was the patron of that Emigration Fund, and the largest donor was Queen Victoria. And Lionel de Rothschild was one of the key funders, as were the owners of the Barclays Bank, of the National Westminster Bank. And so what we see there is these money people knew that these indigents didn't have enough money to even think about going to another country. So in research we published recently, we show specific details of how they recruited people to go to Venezuela in British Guiana, ostensibly to get land, to get a house, get a cow, and farm. But when they got down there, they found primeval forest where they were allocated their lot. And then what really was going on there was they were trying to get them to go work in the gold mines, because they had discovered gold mines at the time down in Venezuela. So we see the Queen and her entourage and all the members of the Bank of England participating in this, what do you call this? This scam, this confidence trick over American citizens and over British citizens to send them all over the world and put them into debt, which they all got into debt, and few could buy their way out. So they had effectively replaced black and brown plantation slavery with this new form of debt slavery. And one of the things we see from that Hazard Circular in 1860s is they specifically realized that having plantation slaves was more expensive because they had to house and feed them, where these new debt slaves could work as cheaply and you wouldn't have to house and feed them. They'd find their own way. So, and that's the system we have today. We see people who have used debt slavery to control labor all throughout the world, and their primary objective is to enslave human beings to their economic objectives.
Absolutely. And the militarism and fascism of the British East India Company was the basis of Cecil Rhodes and the wars, the Boer wars in Africa, that happened in Transvaal, the pharmaceutical experimentation, the propaganda. And right now, it's the same exact thing. Klaus Schwab is telling us we are all going to become the economic slaves that he tells us we have to become after the reset. He tells us it's going to be built back better, but he doesn't mention that it has to be destroyed first. And so basically they're telling us they're going to destroy the economy to build it back their way based upon carbon footprints, which are all complete lies and climate lies, climate change lies. And basically, you know, transhumanism is going to be our savior. And it's the same exact story as Cecil Rhodes and the Society of the Elect. It hasn't changed one iota.
Well, let's talk about specific about Klaus in South Africa. What we discovered in our research about him is that his father was a primary engineer for Adolf Hitler in the development of the German nuclear program during the war with his company Escher Weiss. And what we saw going forward is that Klaus went to a university in Switzerland, and in that university was a nuclear power plant actually embedded underneath into the rock underneath the university where he went. And then we see Escher Weiss change its name a couple of times. I can't remember what the name is right now. Festo is one. No, but I'll think of it in a second. Anyway, that company continued in the nuclear field, this Escher Weiss company, and they teamed up with a South African company to process uranium in South Africa for Klaus Schwab's companies. And so when we hear him disingenuously talk about the need to replace fossil fuels and nuclear fuels, that's a total lie. He wants a monopoly on those very things. And he knows the only way he's going to get it is to get the general population to be negative about these forms of energy.
His prediction in his books about the fourth industrial revolution, that's not what it is. It's the fourth Reich.
Right.
It's like the third Reich of the fascism of Hitler. This is the fourth Reich. It's an economic fascism that literally says it's going to take all of your possessions away from you. And recently now they're coming out and saying, oh, no, we have to do what the World Economic Forum says because we have to change all money into digits so that all digits, all money is controlled by the U.S. Fed. That's what they've always wanted to do, the Brits. Have right. a central bank that was in control of everything, and they would take the indigents, ship them out through human trafficking to their death or to their exploitation, doesn't matter, and that, in fact, the elite would be beyond nations. They would be into a globalist society that would gather together every year to plan the continuing demise of the human race. It's hard to believe, but that is what you and your miners have discovered, what you discovered with Glenn Youngkin, what you discovered with Jonathan and Richard Simons. These are the same path that we've been following now for the last couple of years. And unfortunately, they all lead back to the same evil people. What happened right. in Virginia is because of Mark Malik Brown, a Privy Council member that we have referred to as part of this group. And until we have free elections in America, we didn't elect anybody. They were selected. They weren't elected. So thank you for the research that you and your team are doing. It's always refreshing to hear it. And it's many times, as I said earlier, it's shocking to sometimes see the historical proof of just how vile the people are who have put us in this circumstance.
Absolutely. Well, it's great to see you and love the Bolo.
John Barnwell, Bolo Envy. Thank you, Michael.
Bye.